It's easy to forget sometimes that all of us are the beneficiaries of remarkable luck in being here at all. For you to be listening to this program, every single one of your direct biological ancestors, for thousands and thousands of generations, had to survive to an age where they could pass on their genes, and that in an uncertain and often dangerous world. Anyway, that was the way that Tom Sutcliffe introduced Start the Week this week, and I was really amused at the idea that every single one of your direct biological ancestors for thousands and thousands of years had to pass on their genes in order for anyone to listen to Take Note, which is a podcast about paying attention, keeping a notebook. This is episode, I don't know, is it 210?
And genealogy.
And genealogy.
Now it's a yeah.
I think it's episode 210.
210, it's a decasode.
It's a decasode, so our good friend, number one fan of the show, occasional co-host Ryan Sly is here. Ryan, thank you and your thousands and thousands of ancestors, generations of ancestors.
Hello, hello, thank you. And your ancestors.
Thank you. Yes, I was waiting for that. I wanted to make sure that if I thanked all of your ancestors, you would thank all of my ancestors. So on the show, we talk about keeping notebooks, and sometimes we talk about things we read. Ryan, you're our guest this week. What do you got?
All right. I have an admission here this time. I wrote in my Heartland, a.k.a. Harvester edition, the emoji I've always thought was a face with one lamb ear, which I somehow never questioned, is actually a face with one hand saluting.
I knew exactly which one you were talking about. I never thought it was lamb ear. But when you said one lamb ear, it all clicked for me.
There's no reasonable explanation for why I would have ever thought that's what it was. It makes absolutely no sense, which is why I never used it. But I zoomed in on it one day, and I wrote that note.
Well, it's the people who sent it to you where you thought to yourself, why did they send me that person with a lamb's ear? What could that possibly mean? And yet you didn't get to the bottom of it.
That's the emoji.
That's actually why I got to the bottom of it, because I was like, wait a second, he sent me the lamb ear guy. Oh, it's a salute.
I just asked him if he wanted to meet at 7 o'clock, and he sends me this strange lamb ear situation. Well, Ryan, your ancestors are vaguely disappointed.
Indeed.
But I appreciate the admission, though. What do you got, Adam?
All right. I was in the airport, which is the best place for what do you gots. There's a young woman there. She was wearing a Halloween shirt on September 15th. The Halloween shirt read, "Thick thighs and spooky vibes."
Bad rhymes. And it doesn't rhyme. That's all right.
That is the one bumper sticker of t-shirts.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What do you got, Ted?
Half as many messages as thighs. Okay, this was a post-it note applied to the wall in the communal kitchen at my workplace, and it read the following in slightly harried handwriting: about my sandwich yesterday wrapped in orange tissue, I hope that there was still enough mayo for you after I licked off most of it.
Whoa.
This was a post-it note on the wall in the office.
Wow.
I hope you didn't bring a sandwich.
As much as your minds are spinning right now, that is how deeply we have dissected, my colleagues and I, this post-it note.
So someone's been stealing his lunch.
Her?
I mean, her?
Allegedly.
Ooh.
There's a high potential suspect who has been known to lord over the kitchen. But I a few of my quibbles. First, orange tissue. Who wraps a sandwich in orange tissue? Second, who steals a sandwich that was on the counter, presumably? Because this post-it was not on the fridge. This was off to the side. Who would steal that sandwich wrapped in tissue from a countertop and then eat it? There's a lot of questions.
Do you think this is a memento situation where this person thinks that their sandwich is being stolen, but they have amnesia and they're forgetting that they're eating their own sandwich and getting very upset?
It would explain the tattoo of a sandwich on her forearm. What do you got, Ryan?
In that same Heartland edition, I wrote, delighted to find there are Reddits and other bloggy things dedicated to both hating the use of the word ask as a noun and the word gift as a verb. For example, my only ask is that you gift these your Creed albums to someone you truly love before your sentencing. Someone said ask like 40 times in a work call, and I Googled and found out other people hated it as much as I did, and it gave me a lot of joy.
You were not alone. What do you got, Adam?
So I'm reading from a Field Notes Index edition, which has like 6 extra pages. I really like this edition. It kind of all, you know, it's nice. It's a little beefy, nice paper. My pocket in the back started to fall apart, but not really before I was finished with it. Anyway, I wrote this airport
what
bar.
If the what if the pocket fell apart 6 pages from the end? Like, the pocket would have lasted...
Yeah, if it was a 48-page book.
If it hadn't been 6 pages longer, the pocket would have lasted the perfect amount of time. Right. Anyway,
and I said 6 pages, but that's because I'm bad at math. It's 8 pages, obviously. It's got to be divided by 4. I apologize. I apologize to both of you. I apologized to your ancestors for thousands and thousands of generations. All right. This is this happened at the airport bar early in the morning. You know, airport's the best place for what you got. There's a loud guy who is shocked that someone's Bears Mongo jersey, so the jersey reads Mongo, M-O-N-G-O, has nothing to do with, quote, the database Mongo. And he's trying to dig himself out of the embarrassment, and he's trying to move on to a football conversation. But I keep hearing him say database, the word database, loudly over and over again. And it is bittersweet for me. Because Mongo is the nickname for Bears quarterback Steve McMichael. Maybe you guys knew that. I did not know that when I was in high school and he was the current Bears quarterback player.
I just know Mongo as the database. That's my point of reference. Mongo.
That's right. Yeah. What do you got, Ted?
That's amazing. Quick quote from my wife to my son at the dinner table. Don't eat 2 bananas at the same time, please.
It's a good way to avoid cramps, though.
It's one banana per thigh, I think was his thinking there. What do you got, Ryan?
So this one is from Harvest Edition. I think it's my last one. It's the one with the apples on the front. I had given it to my daughter, Lily, and she wrote on the front page, and then that was it. So she gave it back to me recently. And
that's nice.
Before I read my What Do You Got, this is the one page in that book that she had written. Halloween 2021, costumes, cat queen, werewolf, spelled W-H-E-R-E, wolf, candy types, gummy, hard, chocolate, peanut. That's it.
That's great.
And my What Do You Got out of this book, which I absolutely love this edition. It's so great. Painted on the back of a van I saw driving home from work, Texas Quality Plumbing is responsible for the health of the nation. Follow that up with one bumper sticker on a late model Volvo XC70.
Sure.
Classic blue, red, I used to be cool.
Nice. When you're writing down these one bumper stickers, are you driving and writing?
No. Okay, that one, I think I wrote at a red light. I generally do not. I can usually remember one bumper sticker's worth.
That's a little brag there. A little brag.
No big deal.
Throw that in there.
I kind of want to be a werewolf, W-H-E-R-E. I go to a costume party. I'm not really a costume sort of guy, but I like the idea that maybe I could get a shirt with a map on it and just a wolf head, and then I could say I'm a werewolf, W-H-E-R.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I support that.
You think if I do that, do you think welcome. I have like a little name badge that says werewolf spelled?
No, I'd rather you just had to explain it 34 times through a wolf map. I'm a werewolf.
Yeah.
You're a what now? A werewolf. Sorry, you're going to have to.
What's with the shirt? Well, it's like it's a pun.
There's a pun on the word werewolf. My friend Ryan, his daughter had a field note, and she wrote, it was just on the first page of it in 2021. All right, I got one more. I'm writing in a Field Notes Craft Edition, which is a refreshing, return to a classic. It's really been quite just satisfying, delightful. Another quick one. This is a quote from a high-level academic leader at Rice University who was giving a big fancy presentation as they launched a new strategic plan. And he said, "The genie, like Elvis, has left the building."
Nailed it.
Wow. Wow.
You got another one, Adam?
I got one more. I got one last one. It was my first morning at the big conference that I was running last week. A woman says to me that she's like, "Oh, you look tired." That's how the whole thing started. And then the second morning at the conference, a guy says to me, he tells me that I look tired, which is fantastic. Later,
more water.
Yeah, I guess so. I wasn't feeling tired. Anyway, this is on these people. I know
I've taken that the vibe of their comments and brought it into this podcast, which is solid work by me, I think.
But so this guy, the second guy, later in the day, he sees me, and he makes a point to apologize, which can only tell me how my face must have read when he first says it. And he goes, "I've been thinking about this all day. I shouldn't have said anything to you. I realized maybe you were just sick." That actually happened to me.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Did you punch him in the face?
No, I took out my notebook. Sweet, sweet revenge.
I'll get him good. Should have written it down
right in front of him.
Click, aggressive pen click.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, we read a book for the podcast. We all agreed to read the same book so that we could then discuss it. Posted it quickly on our social media, which is my chance to plug Instagram. I started an Instagram account where I'm mostly me. I can be honest about that. It's a transparent podcast. Just post clips of the show and other fun little stuff, but it's takenote_pod. So if you're interested in our content and
I'm interested in who got takenote pod without the underscore.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Okay. Did I check? I hope I spent my time in a better way, but I did have to. It's like, whoa, underscore. Ha, huh, thank God. Pulled out of the nosedive on that. The underscore saved us.
Absolutely.
Once again. But we read the book New Teeth by Simon Rich, and this was a recommendation from you, Ryan, which I, if I recall, was a recommendation from somebody else.
That's correct. My sister-in-law recommended.
I'm a big fan of Simon Rich. I've read one of his books before. A little tiny one. I think it's called Man Seeking Woman, if I remember correctly. I think there's an astronaut on the cover. He's very funny. He for some time was known as the guy that wrote the only good Shouts and Murmurs in the New Yorker, although I think the Shouts and Murmurs have gotten better. It's a very funny book. He's a very funny guy.
I was not really aware of him. Like, I don't know. It just hadn't really pierced my cone of consciousness to associate his name and to know his name and have any kind of connection with it whatsoever. So I came into it, I think, very fresh. And I agree. This was a very funny book. It's a book of stories. And, you know, I think one of my overarching observations, which I say this positively, is that every story had a twist, a premise, is the word that I wrote down. And you kind of realize, you know, as you're starting out each story, a certain premise or a certain twist or a certain tweak is going to kick in and bring the funny. And I found that starting out one of his stories, every time I became almost giddy with excitement at trying to figure out what the premise of that particular story was going to be. Did y'all share a similar experience?
Yes. I completely agree with you. You started saying that, and I thought, was there one without a premise? And, I mean, that's a silly thing to think. I was just trying to, you know, I was trying to remember. I kind of felt like there was maybe one without it. And I thought that one was really good, too. And it, you know, arguably has a premise. But the one that is the least, the one that seems maybe the most autobiographical is Beauty and the Beast, which is about a screenwriter in Los Angeles whose daughter loves Beauty and the Beast. And so they have to listen to it constantly. And that one was, especially funny. And, it's still a premise, but it was the one that seemed the most autobiographical. It was just interesting to see that, he can do all these things. He's a very impressive writer.
Oh, yeah. Well, but even that one, I mean, I'm not trying to contradict you, but it starts out once upon a time in a land called Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, even one of us is trying to contradict anyone, but we're clearly fuming. We're furious with each other under the surface.
How dare he. Like two English professors in the same department at a small liberal arts college in New England. But even that one has this kind of a premise. It's a fairy tale about a screenwriter who lives in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Who falls in love with Josh Gad.
That's right.
That was really good. but obviously for these to be so funny, he has to carry through with the premise, which I think is where you realize how masterful he is at carefully controlling a premise and driving it through. And I found that the stories were satisfying even just as stories, even as they were also delivering these quite bizarre sort of viewpoints. Like the first story, I mean, the first line of the first story was, "I am me own master and commander," which immediately I was totally sold because I love Master and Commander, and he was manipulating my love of that movie for humorous purposes, and it worked right away. And he says, "I feared serve no king and fear no god. I would sooner cut 100 throats than heed one order from a living man," and on. And then he says, "I don't recycle. When I'm done with a bottle, I just be throwing it out." And at that moment, I realized that we were in good hands with this book. But then that story in which it's a pirate finding a child and raising a child with his hearty, but going through a lot of the modern child care challenges that we are probably all familiar, at least to the three of us, was like a really good story. There's a beginning, middle, and end. And there were emotional ups and downs, even as he's a pirate, you know, talking about contemporary approaches to raising a child. But by the end, I was invested in the actual story itself, which I think is really challenging when you're probably writing first to be funny.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's good enough that he can pay it off as a story. Almost down the line. I mean, there was not a story that it didn't feel like was well plotted and well paced. Like they all were really good. What was your favorite one, Ryan?
That's a tough one. I think I really liked The Revolution a lot, which is like the prince, goes undercover as a peasant and yeah. Yeah, befriends an invalid girl in a barn and like tries to help with the revolution, but then ends up like kind of back on the side of the royals and becomes king, and is just becomes the sort of thing they're revolting against. But you know, it has a certain, you know, Monty Python vibe to it here and there. I thought that one was really funny. I like the pirate one. You know, it. If I had a gripe with that one, it was just over so much of the, like, he be doing this and he be doing that over. And
you're making me laugh just even in your criticism.
See, I know. Well, I was going to say that, but then the note that I wrote was like, he keeps writing phrases like all neurotic-like, which then made, I was like, well, okay, maybe that's, I was just wasn't in the mood for it that day, because it is funny.
I think, you know, I think the thing is, I think some of these stories are a lot, and you really have to be like in the mode. You have to like, you have to sort of slide into being in the mode for it, because the very last one, I showed it to my wife because I thought it was like, you know, like I was just delighted by the last one. And she was like, yeah, this is funny. I'm not going to read this whole thing. It was the shortest story in there, though. And I completely get that. I think like his voice
I went through exactly the same sequence. I was like, guys, let me read you this story. And a third of the way through, my wife and my daughter were like, okay, all right.
And I think that's just a, like, that's just a product of like, these are, you know, you don't read in this day and age, you don't read a book of funny short stories very often. Like Simon Rich, I think, is one of the few people doing it. David Sedaris is doing something different, right? There's not a laugh every, you know, in many of these stories, there is a joke in every single paragraph, you know? It's just something I think we're not used to. And I actually was glad that, we decided to read this in a pretty short time frame, because like the other Simon Rich book I have, I think, is even smaller than this, and I loved it, and I probably spent a year reading it, because it's like, oh, that's funny, and you close it, which I think just any short story is sometimes very easy to do that. Book of essays, book of short stories, instead of a novel, it's easy to read one, feel satisfied, and close it. So there is a lot of that, and I think there's something about reading them in short order and like kind of readjusting maybe what we're always used to by reading all these short, funny stories, one right after another. My favorite was Clabo. So from the revolution, which was also, at that point, I think that was one of my favorites, going right into Clabo. Clabo. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better 1-2 punch with a fist the size of boulders. So I guess I should say Clabo is about a giant ape man who saves the city from aliens, slugs, I think space slugs, a few different types of aliens, and but he's no longer needed. And for all of us as middle-aged men who will eventually not be needed by society or our workplaces, it hit close to, I appreciated reading it. It gave me a new view on life and how pathetic I already am and will soon become.
We're all just painting on our ties for work every day. Is that what...
You have the power to make yourself senior coordinator for the Office of Community Affairs if you want to.
Genuinely, actually, like, Clabo really did, like, it hit me somewhere in addition to making me laugh my ass off. Like, you know, I do often think about the fact that that's, you know, these people that maybe I roll my eyes at every once in a while, you know, like the person that tells me, oh, I'm sorry for saying you were sick. I realize, or I'm sorry for saying you're tired. Maybe you're sick, right? Like, I'll be that person.
Clabo, sorry he say you tired. Clabo should have said you sick. I mean, it's a testament to this book. I can open any page in the Clabo story and read a funny line. Mm-hmm. Like when his granddaughter and son are on the call, and his adult son says, thanks for the birthday present, Eli said. And Clabo said, what birthday present? Clabo did not send present. And Mimi, his wife, sighed. I sent Olivia a doll from both of us. Like, Oh, Clubbo said. Clubbo, sorry.
It hit too close to home. I mean, my dad did that to me this year. Less than a month ago. My dad was like, oh yeah, I hope we sent something. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and that's, therein lies, I think, it's called New Teeth. There's a pacifier that's been gnawed in half on the cover. These are all parenting stories too. And in some way, or one way or another. And he filters and squeezes all of these tales through this sieve of parenthood that I think probably, for the three of us, just absolutely squeezes every last drop of potential, whatever that combination of humor and humiliation is, just right down to the absolute bone, which it brings some kind of crazy energy to this, like the whole parenthood angle. It's just kind of wild to me how it spun around so many different times and made just super funny. I mean, the detective story, where the detective is a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I liked that one because the babies talk like adults, which is always funny.
It's always funny.
He got more gags out of Object Permanence. Like, I feel like Object Permanence is I wouldn't say it's a go-to, but like that's an old trope, and he found more laughs out of Object Permanence than I thought anyone possibly could.
Yeah,
it was good. Can I ask you guys about Screwball?
I thought that one was really funny too.
How much of that is true? Right, like there's a thing at the in the acknowledgments where he talks about all the sources for Screwball, and then the next line is the rest of the stories are made up, which made me wonder if more of Screwball was also made up than I realized.
I was not aware of the story. Maybe I feel like we've all been exposed to a lot of Babe Ruth lore, and I don't recall that one. Maybe it was a minor story that he turned into a lengthy treatment. Like, some guy's kid got bumped from the team because he showed up onto the minor league squad or something.
Yeah, I think that there were parts of it, about him, first starting out and, like, getting signed and who he played with and stuff that were possibly true. But I think that's probably it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like entirely fictional. Okay.
I don't believe. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean,
he lived in an orphanage,
and he was sort of elevated out of the orphanage. The first line I laughed at in Screwball was, "I was in knots. Our first practice. I've only ever played orphan ball."
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very funny joke about like Babe Ruth's actual life. Like, you could make that joke about Babe Ruth himself without the entire story around it. But I'm not sure if I can say it correctly, but the premise in which Babe Ruth in this story was unaware of how amazing he was, and he kind of just kept encountering these moments with a kind of naivete. I laughed so hard at these moments. Oh, man.
I felt bad because I blew up the baseball on the one.
I'm trying. I'm leafing through and trying to find these lines.
He was real anti-Clabo, that Babe Ruth.
While you look for that, I want to read one line that I really liked in that one, which was, "When I woke up, I knew something was wrong because instead of being in my bed, I was underneath a bridge."
Yeah. Let's see. Here we go. Yeah. Okay. So he's like, he's at the tryout or something, and the coach is trying to guarantee fairness. "I tried my best at his drills, but I'd never done them before, and it was hard to keep everything straight. For example, one time we were doing throws from deep center, and I was supposed to toss it to the cutoff man at second, but I forgot and just threw it past him on a line drive straight into the catcher's mitt, and the catcher fell backward from the force. And someone stood and said, "Our game is forever changed. Nothing will be the same." And everyone kind of bowed their heads in silence for a while, like the nuns used to at St. Mary's when the priest talked about Jesus. And I was like, what's happening? Another mistake I made is that I hit a ball too hard and it exploded. Like, I think that's where in this entire book, that's where I was belly laughing and weeping to myself and where I had to take a break from reading. He's like a skilled practitioner of like broad appeal jokes, if that makes sense. Maybe there's some language for that. But like, I feel like his command of like, you know, kind of like you were saying about object permanence, like he wasn't working so far outside the realm of like sitcom humor, but he was just doing it really well. Like it just, it felt like a excessively funny book. Like the jokes were like, could be like national television jokes or something, which to me goes back to the idea of like, you just felt like you're in good hands. He's just like, I don't know, some kind of command of the material, just really top of his game type funny stuff.
I agree. Take note, seal of approval.
Yeah.
For sure. So whoever recommended this, I don't know if it's a reliable source or, you know, I don't know, maybe they wrote some big movie that came out this week or something. I don't know. Whoever that person was, thank them for the recommendation, Ryan. I had a lot of fun reading this book.
I will do that.
We all did.
And I will plug her movie called Hold Your Breath on Hulu. It is the opposite of this book, but she's a very funny person, and it was a good recommend from my sister-in-law, Carrie Krause.
Can't wait to see that film. Very excited.
Yeah, I feel way too nervous to, after reading and talking about this very funny book, to for us to try to like end on some funny joke. I feel like jokes are over on this show.
Just play it flat.
Yep.
Play it straight.
Could you play the song Right Now by Van Halen over the end of this?
That's right.
Or like, oh my God, the way he kept referring back to like Backdraft.
The only three laser dicks. That's my favorite part so of that good. Story. It's just like,
oh man, that was so funny.
And you know that that laser disc like must exist. Like that was, I was like, how does he know? Yeah. Right now exists.
Yeah, he had to have had those three.
Yeah, you don't just make that one up out of thin air. Well, you have been listening to Take Note. Appreciate you. You can go to our website, takenote.space, where you can sign up for our newsletter. You can support us, find a link to our Patreon, which is those who already support us. That's amazing. Really appreciate it. You can... let's see. Now you can go to Instagram now and find us there. It's takenote_pod. Lots of little bits and bites, kind of social media friendly stuff, but also clips from the show, which has been a fun little project to try and undertake and kind of have these fun things we do float to the surface in a new way. Would love to hear your thoughts on that Instagram, which you can send us your thoughts to our email at takenotecentral@gmail.com. Ryan, thank you as always for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you guys.
And take care.